We usually think of the brain as this highly complex, strictly wired circuit board.
I like a computer.
Exactly. Just
Yeah.
neurons firing signals down static cables, essentially a wet biological computer processing inputs and then, spitting out outputs. But the sources we're diving into today, specifically this incredibly detailed deep dive from the OOTW Journal called The Rhythms of Mind, it suggests we basically need to throw that whole metaphor out the window. Like picturing a circuit board completely misses the actual mechanism that generates our conscious experience.
He really does.
Yeah, so we should be picturing a symphony orchestra instead.
I mean, this shift from viewing the brain as a rigid circuit to this dynamic symphony is it's just profound. Because when you focus solely on the wiring, you prioritize the physical connections
Right.
and you totally ignore the timing. And in the human brain, timing isn't just, a byproduct of the system operating. The timing is the system.
The timing is the system. Wow. So today's mission is to decode what the OOTW Journal calls the grammar of the mind.
Yeah, that's a great phrase.
It is, right. We're looking at how electrical rhythms basically act as a metronome for our waking reality.
Right.
And crucially, we're going to examine these landmark neuroscientific studies from Science, the Journal of Neuroscience, and Nature to uncover the really counterintuitive mechanics of what happens to this internal music when the brain is introduced to psychedelics.
Yeah, and to truly understand the mechanics of how psychedelics alter that internal music,
Yeah.
we first have to establish the baseline, right?
Okay.
We have to define what the brain's normal music actually sounds like.
Right, the everyday state. So the OTW article points us to a foundational 2004 review. This was published in Science by Gary Busacki and Andreas Dragoon, and they basically mapped out how brain oscillations span five orders of magnitude.
Yeah, it's a massive range.
It's huge. You have this massive range of frequencies from the incredibly slow delta waves, rolling at under 1 hertz.
Right, deep sleep stuff.
Exactly. All the way up to fast gamma waves, humming at over 100 hertz.
Right, and that Busacki and Dragoon review was a turning point because it cemented the idea that these rhythmic waves of electrical activity they're doing heavy computational work.
They're not just background noise.
Exactly. For decades, the dominant assumption in neuroscience was that the real processing happened when individual neurons fired.
Yeah.
And the waves were just the exhaust fumes of that engine, just an artifact.
Like engine hum.
Yeah, exactly. But as Busacki wrote in the paper, these rhythms form a hierarchical system of oscillators. They're this phylogenetically ancient, functionally vital code.
Wow.
And it's conserved all across mammalian evolution.
So it's essential because if you have billions of noisy isolated cells, rhythm is kind of the only way they can act as one cohesive mind, right?
That's exactly it.
The synchrony of these waves allows the brain to take scattered neurons and bind them into temporary assemblies.
Right, the binding problem.
Yes, the binding problem. It's the mechanism that lets your brain bind a specific visual color to a specific physical shape.
Seamlessly.
Yeah, seamlessly in a fraction of a second.
And that binding problem is solved by the conductor of the orchestra, which really brings us to the specific frequency band that acts as the primary conductor for our waking consciousness.
Okay, the alpha waves.
Right, alpha waves. These sit right in the middle of the spectrum, usually around 8 to 12 hertz.
Okay.
And for a long time, early neuroscientists dismissed alpha as basically the brain's idling rhythm.
Really, like a car in neutral.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They saw it dominate the resting human brain, particularly over the visual cortex at the back of the head, when a person closes their eyes.
Right.
And they just assumed that the brain was doing nothing.
Just resting. But the modern data completely overturns that old view. I mean, alpha is not the sound of the brain doing nothing.
No, quite the opposite.
It is an active inhibitory gate. Like when alpha power is high over a specific brain region, that region is being actively suppressed.
Yeah.
It's being held offline.
Right.
And when alpha drops, that region is released to process information. So I was thinking about this, and alpha is essentially the bouncer at the club of our consciousness.
Oh, I love that analogy, the bouncer.
Right. It stands at the door and actively decides which sensory inputs get in and which get suppressed because the brain is already, confident in its predictive model.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the bouncer is enforcing the brain's predictive model.
Okay.
Our normal, everyday waking consciousness is a highly ordered, rhythmically constrained state. We are constantly filtering and inhibiting raw sensory data.
Right. We can't take it all in.
No, we'd be overwhelmed. The brain already has a confident top-down model of what the world looks like.
Okay.
So high alpha is the sound of the brain trusting its own predictions.
Wow.
And suppressing the raw, bottom-up sensory noise that contradicts it.
That is so interesting. Okay, so if the brain relies heavily on this alpha rhythm to maintain a stable, predictable reality, what mechanism triggers the collapse of that structure? Like, what happens when a psychedelic compound slips the bouncer a 20 and gives him the night off?
Right, right. Well, the mechanics of that collapse are wildly counterintuitive.
Sure.
We can look at a 2013 study published in the Journal of Neuroscience.
Okay.
This was by a team led by Suresh Muthukumaraswamy and Robin Carhart-Harris.
Oh, right.
And they used magnetoencephalography, or a MEG scanner, to observe the brain under intravenous psilocybin.
Okay, let's briefly contextualize the MEG scanner because the technology itself is just wild.
Oh, it really is.
Yeah, unlike an fMRI that tracks, you know, slow blood flow.
Right.
A MEG reads the actual magnetic fields generated by these electrical rhythms, and it does it with millisecond precision.
Yeah, it's incredibly fast.
It uses these squid-wide sensors bathed in liquid helium to detect magnetic fields that are, get this, a billion times smaller than the Earth's magnetic field.
It's mind-blowing.
It is. It's arguably the most sensitive camera we have for observing the mind's music.
So with that level of precision, the researchers administered psilocybin and just watched the rhythms respond in real time.
Okay.
And the result was what they termed a broadband desynchronization.
Broadband desynchronization. Okay, break that down.
Basically, the spontaneous oscillatory power of the brain just fell across a massive range, dropping from 1 all the way to 50 hertz in the posterior cortex.
Wow.
And even more widely in the frontal regions, the synchronized rhythms just simply fell quiet.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, and I have to push back a little on how we interpret this.
Sure.
Because I'm looking at this data, and it feels completely contradictory.
How so?
Well, if a subject is experiencing a massive, you know, all-encompassing visual hallucination,
yeah,
you would logically expect the neural orchestra to be playing at fortissimo, right?
You'd think so.
Yeah, you'd expect every section to be blasting at maximum volume to generate that much novel imagery. Like, how does a drop in electrical rhythm generate a fractal geometric landscape?
See, your skepticism is exactly what makes this finding so revolutionary, because it forces us to rethink how perception actually works.
Okay.
The drop in rhythm doesn't generate the hallucination. The drop in rhythm allows the hallucination to emerge from the background noise.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. This is the core of Carhart-Harris's entropic brain hypothesis.
The entropic brain, right.
Right. The top-down alpha rhythms are heavy constraints. Hmm. They force the brain's activity into tight, predictable, orderly patterns.
Okay.
So when the psilocybin causes those rhythms to desynchronize, the constraint is lifted.
So the bouncer leaves the door unattended.
Precisely that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Carhart-Harris notes that by collapsing the brain's orderly governance, you increase the entropy.
Meaning the randomness.
Exactly. The randomness and diversity of the brain signal. The confident predictions of the higher cortex just lose their grip.
Wow.
And without the alpha rhythm suppressing it, the raw, chaotic, bottom-up neural activity from the visual system and the emotional centers, mm-hmm. it just breaks through into conscious awareness.
So it's always there, just being suppressed.
Right. The visual cortex is no longer constrained by the expectation of what a room should look like. So it just begins processing a wildly diverse range of unfiltered, unconstrained patterns.
And the data in the source backs that up perfectly. I mean, the specific drop in alpha band rhythms over the visual and parietal cortex directly tracked the intensity of the visual experience the participants reported.
That's the fascinating part.
Right. Like, the quieter the bouncer got, the more intense the visions became. It literally dismantles the rigid rhythms of our external reality and just lets the raw data rush in.
It's a complete collapse of the system that maintains the ego and the external spatial reference.
Yeah.
And the sources actually note that the largest power reductions were centered right on the hubs of the default mode network.
The default mode network.
Yeah, which is the system closely linked to our sense of self.
Okay, so a broadband collapse perfectly explains the mechanics of how psilocybin alters our perception of the existing world. But a separate paper in our stack adds a completely different layer to this mechanism.
It does.
Yeah, a 2019 study published in Nature Scientific Reports by Christopher Timmerman, and this one looks at DMT.
Right.
And it shows what happens when a completely new rhythm rises up to replace the old one.
Yeah, Timmerman's team conducted a placebo-controlled EEG study on intravenous DMT. And the timeline of this compound is crucial here.
Because it's so fast.
Exactly. Unlike psilocybin, which unfolds over hours, intravenous DMT peaks within 2 to 3 minutes.
Just a few minutes.
Yeah. It produces this incredibly rapid, deeply immersive state where subjects consistently report breaking through into entirely different spatial dimensions.
Okay, and the EEG readings during that three-minute window, they track this incredible sequence of events. Like, in the first minute, the mechanics look very similar to psilocybin.
Right, the broadband collapse.
Yeah, the DMT suppresses the alpha and beta waves, the predictive model collapses, and the entropy goes up. But then, right at the absolute peak of the experience, when the subject is completely immersed in this alternate visionary space,
right.
The brain doesn't just stay quiet in a state of broadband desynchronization. Like, a massive surge of slow delta and theta rhythms erupts,
right.
Particularly over the medial temporal regions.
Yeah, and the medial temporal lobe is deeply involved in memory, spatial navigation, and the generation of our internal maps.
Okay.
So when Timmerman analyzed this specific rhythmic signature, you know, the alpha collapsing while the slow theta and delta waves surged in these deep brain regions.
Yeah.
He noted it perfectly matched a state we already know.
Which is?
It is the exact rhythmic signature of a brain that is dreaming.
Oh, wow. So what does this all mean? Like, the mechanics suggest the brain is literally switching channels on a television.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. The alpha and beta rhythms that anchor us to the external waking reality, they fade out into static. The constraint is gone. And then this inner visionary reality boots up on a completely different frequency band. Like, it completely explains the mechanics behind why a DMT breakthrough feels like visiting a distinct architectural dimension rather than just distorting the room you're sitting in.
Exactly.
You aren't taking the filter off the room. Your brain is utilizing its dream mechanics to generate a whole new room while you are wide awake.
What's really fascinating here is the sheer alignment between the objective physics of the brain waves and the subjective lived experience.
Yeah.
Timmerman actually described it as seeing the brain simulate a reality.
Wow.
The clinical data maps perfectly onto the reports of feeling removed from physical space. I mean, the electrophysiology confirms that the brain has functionally swapped the rhythm of processing the outer world for the rhythm of generating an inner one.
So if the brain's internal rhythm is the foundational mechanism for how we construct reality,
right.
We have to look at how external variables manipulate this delicate state.
We do.
If the internal metronome is destabilized, what happens when an external metronome is introduced? Which brings us to the physics of music and ceremony.
Right. And the neuroscience of brainwaves gives us the mechanical explanation for why music is so foundational to these experiences.
Okay.
In physics, there's a principle called entrainment.
Entrainment, right?
Yeah. Simply put, if you have two oscillating systems, they will naturally exchange energy and pull each other into phase.
Okay.
So a brain's internal rhythms can be nudged, pushed, and pulled by external acoustic rhythms.
Voice sound.
Exactly. The tempo, the frequency, the resonance in the room, the brain will naturally try to synchronize its own electrical firing to match that external beat.
Right, but under normal waking conditions, our alpha bouncer is strong enough to resist getting completely swept away by external stimuli, right?
Clearly, yes.
We maintain our internal tempo. But because the psychedelic compound has just caused that broadband collapse, the brain's rigid rhythms are completely untethered.
Exactly. The dominant rhythms that usually anchor the system have been quieted, which makes the neural assemblies highly malleable.
Okay.
Without that strong top-down constraint, the mind becomes unusually susceptible to being driven by sound. The outer rhythm of the acoustic environment and the untethered inner rhythm of the brain, they entrain with one another.
That makes so much sense. I mean, this mechanical understanding provides so much context for why clinical trials rely on painstakingly curated playlists to guide subjects.
Absolutely.
Right. The outer rhythm basically acts as a structural lifeline when the inner rhythm is in free fall.
Yes.
And the historical connection is undeniable. Like, indigenous cultures who paired plant medicines with repetitive chanting, steady drum beats, and specific rhythmic songs,
right.
They inherently understood a mechanism of coupled oscillators that our modern scanners are, you know, only just now quantifying.
It's true. Consciousness is less about the isolated notes of individual neurons and entirely about the rhythm that arranges them.
Wow.
By changing the acoustic rhythm in the physical space, you can directly guide the electrical rhythm of the mind, steering the arc of the experience when those standard predictive defenses are down.
That is just incredible. But as fascinating as the mechanics of entrainment are, we kind of need to pump the brakes and ground this deep dive for a second?
Agreed.
Yeah. As guides through this material, we really have to separate the highly replicated microscopic data from the microscopic theories that are still, you know, actively debated.
The distinction is vital. The physical measurement of what happens to the brain is robust.
Right.
The broadband desynchronization, the drop in oscillatory power across the alpha band, this has been replicated across LSD, psilocybin, and DMT.
Okay.
Utilizing both MEG and EGG technology. The empirical reality is that the brain's tightly constrained rhythms definitively fall quiet.
But the interpretation of how that quiet translates into a specific vision is where the science is still evolving, right?
Exactly.
Because a MEG scanner is brilliant, but it is a macroscopic tool.
Very much so.
I mean, seeing a drop in alpha power is kind of like looking at the thermal footprint of a massive office building.
That's a good way to look at it.
Right. Like, you can confidently say the building is getting hotter and you know there's a lot of activity inside.
Yeah.
But you have absolutely no idea what exact conversation the people on the third floor are having.
Right.
A drop in alpha is a real signal, but it is a long way from explaining the exact cellular mechanics of how a person suddenly sees a geometric mandala.
We also must contextualize the environment of these findings.
That's important.
Yeah, the studies in the OTW journal utilize pharmaceutical-grade compounds.
Right.
Dosed precisely by weight. In highly controlled clinical settings with heavily screened participants.
Very different from casual use.
Completely. These compounds act on the core mechanisms of reality generation. They remain mostly illegal and are objectively unsafe for certain populations.
Right, particularly anyone with a personal or family history of psychosis or bipolar disorder.
Exactly. The neuroscience provides a framework for understanding the mechanics of perception. It is not a recommendation for altering it.
Right, absolutely. So let's bring this home for the listener. Like, why should you care about the grammar of the mind if you aren't a neuroscientist?
Right.
The insight buried in these journals fundamentally reframes daily waking reality. I mean, we walk around all day assuming our normal state is the objective baseline of the universe.
Well, you really do.
We think this is just what reality looks like, but it's not. The world you see right now is just the byproduct of a highly specific, heavily filtered tempo of brain activity.
And this raises an important question about the utility of that everyday reality.
Okay.
It is tempting to look at the entropic brain hypothesis and conclude that our standard waking mind is just a rigid filter keeping us from a broader truth.
Right, holding us back.
But that tightly governed mind is an evolutionary feature.
Right.
That alpha bouncer enforcing the predictive model is the exact mechanism that allows you to successfully drive a car on a highway, pick a single voice out of a crowded room, and, you know, plan for tomorrow. The rhythmic constraint on our brainwaves is a survival mechanism optimized for functioning in physical space.
But the data proves that this survival rhythm is just one application available to the human hardware.
Very true.
And here is a final thought I want to leave you with today. We've spent this entire deep dive looking at how specific chemical compounds can temporarily lower that alpha gate,
right,
collapse the dominant survival rhythm, and let the unfiltered, unconstrained universe peek through.
Mm-hmm.
But if the mechanism is just a shift in electrical tempo, what entirely ordinary non-pharmacological experiences might be triggering the exact same collapse in your day-to-day life?
That's a great question.
Right. Like, yeah, when you hit a runner's high and the pain suddenly vanishes.
Yeah.
Or you fall so deeply into a creative flow state that 3 hours pass in 10 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Or you hit that strange, lucid, floating moment right before you drift off to sleep.
The hypnagogic state, yeah.
Are those just the moments your brain momentarily drops its alpha bouncer?
It makes you wonder.
It really does. So as you go about your day, pay attention to the music beneath your own mind. You might have more control over the conductor than you think. Catch you on the next deep dive.